Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on, Stephen Craig will be here to reflect on some big games regarding the top four in the Premier League. There's only one place to start. El Clásico, Real Madrid taking on Barcelona. Real Madrid winning by 2-1 to put them now level on points with Atletico Madrid at the top of the table. Just 1 point separating the top three. What a title race that this is going to be. Well, let's welcome in, shall we, Julien Laurent and Ali Moreno. Ali, this was a brilliant game.
Yes, it was. It had absolutely everything that you would want in a game. It had goals, it had controversy, red card, hard tackles, rain, wind, everything and anything. Referees with his mic pack going off. And I'm telling you, the drama in the end, the ball gets pumped into the box, rebounds, Ter Stegen is going up. Is he going to hit it? No. Is he likes that hits it off the crossbar and now then a swing and a miss by Ter Stegen. Frankly, you look at this game and this is what every Clásico should be like. It doesn't work out always that way, but this had absolutely everything. And most of all, the tactical decisions made by both coaches and how those decisions impacted the game. I thought everything was outstanding about this game.
Every Clásico should be played in the rain, Jules, from now on.
No, not just in the rain, in the crazy rain.
Yeah, because like that was torrential, not just, you know, full on.
Raining. It was like, wow. It was to the point that you even wondered at some point if maybe the ref should stop and then they should change shirt because those shirt looks heavy and so were Messi. Certainly was the only one to change his shirt, but it was fantastic. I agree with Ali. Tactically, quite fascinating because what we discussed yesterday on the show worked out. We wondered if that 3-5-2 from Barcelona was suited to this kind of game. Certainly not to lose the battle in midfield, but we didn't mention what could happen on the wings, and we saw certainly on the Benzema goal that 2v1 on the right-hand side for Real Madrid, and there was far too much space for first Valverde and then Lucas Vazquez, and it's an amazing finish by Karim Benzema. And that Real Madrid, with 30% of the ball, just played over the top into behind the Real Madrid, the Barcelona defense, behind the line, and that worked so well for them. And Koeman had to change everything pretty much at halftime. I think a draw probably would have been a fair result, but it was fascinating from start to finish.
These sort of games, Ali, if you were Zinedine Zidane, you would show people and say, you know, I have got some tactical nous.
Well, by now, I don't think Zinedine Zidane should be telling anybody anything. It is clear to me, and it has been for years, that he has a very good mind for the game and in understanding what needed to be done today and what needed to happen on the field in order for Real Madrid to be successful. The first thing that jumps to mind is inclusion of Federico Valverde and what that did to the game. Because of his athleticism and his pace, he can help the midfield three that we have talked so highly about this week, but he also gives you that pace that can get in behind or that pace that can threaten. It also gives you the work defensively that denies the ball to Jordi Alba, where Barcelona is so successful, where Lionel Messi just kind of comes from the opposite side and is able to find that through ball. Because Valverde was there and he puts himself in that passing lane, he was denying access to Jordi Alba. The speed and the threat of Vinicius in behind pushed Sergiño Dest back to a defensive position where now he was not having an impact whatsoever on the right-hand side. So if you're Barcelona and you're not getting access down the left because Alba is covered by Valverde, Dest is ineffective on the right-hand side. Everything is coming to the middle, and now you're Real Madrid sitting there saying, yeah, this is exactly where we want you. And in the first 30 minutes in particular, but really for the first half, every time that Lionel Messi touched the ball in those in-between spaces, how quickly did Real Madrid were able to get right on top of Messi and force him to play the ball back or force a turnover. And once they force a turnover, the willingness and the recognition by Real Madrid in saying, what's the one thing that Barcelona really struggles with defensively? Transition. Let's get after them. So then Valverde gets after them, breaks the line of pressure, gets past the defender, is able to play the ball across to Karim Benzema, and now we're talking about a 1-0 game. To me, what you saw from Zidane today was a real, real coach studying, understanding what are their weaknesses, what are our strengths, how do we add to our strengths, and how do we take away the things that they can do well. They did that so very well in the first half. Second half was a different story, but the first half was outstanding from Real Madrid.
Barca came into this game unbeaten in 19 matches, Jules. What went wrong?
I don't think the back three should, I don't think they should have started with the back three. And again, that's what we discussed yesterday on the show. And we saw when they went to a back four at halftime and Griezmann came on, not that Griezmann made a big difference, although his dummy on the goal is very intelligent. But I thought the back four and then having that front three to occupy every little space on the pitch helped them massively. And I think that's where things turned a little bit because Real Madrid were under a bit more pressure. We saw in the first half, Barcelona committed 9 fouls. 6 of those 9 were on Casemiro, who was able to soak up that pressure every time he was on the ball, every time Barca tried to press. In the second half, it was much more difficult for Madrid, although they had chances, but more difficult to have the ball a bit more and to play exactly the way they did in the first half, like Ali just said. And that's where we saw the best chances for Barcelona. Maybe that penalty on Braithwaite, the last chance and the crossbar from Ilaic. And there was a few more as well in that second half where they had a bit more urgency. And certainly that game plan in the second half with the 4-3-3 works much better than the 3-5-2 at the first half.
The star of the show on so many occasions in these Clásicos has been Lionel Messi. Ali, he was quiet today.
Very quiet. And as I just mentioned, in the first half, I thought Real Madrid were excellent in understanding where the positioning of Lionel Messi was going to be. And it was clear to me that it was a game plan in saying, okay, look, if we force the ball to Lionel Messi, if he's going to get on it, because obviously Barcelona looks for him all the time, the moment he receives the ball, we're on him. And we're frustrating him, and we're pushing him back, and we're pushing him further away from goal. And if there was ever a game that told you Barcelona needs a number 9, this is it. This is the moment in which you, if you're a Barcelona supporter, if you are anybody in a decision-making position with Barcelona, look at this match and say, this is what we're missing when we don't have a real striker. Because they collapsed on Lionel Messi, and so now the ball was being bypassed through Messi or beyond Messi onto Ousmane Dembele in a center striking position, but in a position in which he has to hold the ball up. And what was happening with Dembele? The ball was bouncing off of him from crowded areas, turnover, and once again Real Madrid go in transition. The lack of movement or inability of Ousmane Dembele to recognize the moments in which he then becomes the most dangerous player, where he has to stretch the backline, where he has to create spaces with his movement, that tells you right then and there, this kid is trying to do a job here in this position, but it's not what he does best. And so you're missing another option. Real Madrid did so very well in forcing Lionel Messi into turnovers. And then after that, once he was frustrated, then he pushed himself so far back and so far behind the line that he was unable to impact the game.
The crazy thing is, looking at Real Madrid and their season, Jules, they've had some terrible matches. We were talking beforehand, that embarrassment against Shakhtar B team that was riddled with COVID. But when it comes to big matches, you think Sevilla, you think Liverpool, you think Barcelona, you think Atleti, Atalanta and Inter. They've won 9 and drawn 1. They just get up for it for these big games.
And pretty much every single one of those big games, Zidane's head was on the line. The pressure was huge on him as well and on the team. And every single time they were there, and every single time all that experience, even if you're missing Sergio Ramos, if you're missing Varane, if you're missing someone in midfield, they always responded. And you have to give them so much credit. That, of course, tactically, they're there and there's no problem. But with the mentality, that the sort of mental strength that they have, the experience, but also how well they know each other and how well they can almost play each other with their eyes closed. I mean, you saw that again today. Some of the passage of play was just brilliant because they're so used to play with each other. And when they have to, they know exactly how to impact a game, how to win it, or certainly not to lose it. And just for that, this is a crazy team. This is a fantastic team that have been doing it for so long. And of course, sometimes you have a deeper form and the results don't follow. But most often than not, they've always been there in the big games when it mattered. And now you would not take it away from them to do the double, to win the Champions League and to win La Liga as well.
Which just blows the mind. As I mentioned, that side who looked so terrible in the group stages, Ali, on the brink, well, certainly now in the conversation of maybe winning the Champions League and La Liga. Let's focus on La Liga first, shall we, Ali? Who are the favourites? You knew I was going to ask you.
No idea.
Eight matches to go.
This is such a mess. And And this is all Atletico Madrid is doing. This shoe had never been so complicated. But because Atletico Madrid has been awful over the last couple of months, now Real Madrid, this version of Real Madrid, and as good as we can talk about Real Madrid and how good they were today, certainly in the first half, and how tough, and the personality, and the character, you look at Real Madrid and you say, man, Zidane looks down the bench and he says, who am I going to play? I'm making substitutions today and I have nothing. There is nothing out here that I really feel comfortable putting out on the field. And yet they beat Barcelona in a game that truly, truly matters. And so in terms of that character, you say, well, it has to be Real Madrid. But then again, Real Madrid right now, because they are still in Champions League, what you saw today in the second half is that they were tired. Mm. There were legs out there that were not nearly as dynamic in the second half as they were in the first half. And now they're going to go and play Liverpool and possibly continue to advance in the competition. And you know, having worked for Real Madrid, how important Champions League is within the culture of Real Madrid. La Orejona and all this conversation about Champions League itself. And so what becomes the priority? And I just don't think that this team is deep enough to be able to handle both competitions and do so with consistency. So that opens the door again for Atletico Madrid, and I don't think that Barcelona is out of this at all. Today would be a disappointing result and a disappointing performance in the first half, but Barcelona is still very much in this. They have to play Atletico Madrid. Yes. That may be the game that decides their own fate. As for Real Madrid, I don't know what to say other than that I never saw this coming.
Did you answer my question, Ali? Who are the favorites in the position that they're in right now? Who are the favorites?
Have I not answered the question?
I don't think so.
Run the tape back. I think I did. No, I did not. I don't want to answer the question. I don't know. The answer is I don't know. But I'll give you an answer. After today, Real Madrid.
Wow. Jules?
I mean, to be fair, if there was a winner tonight, and the best winner for Atletico was to be Real Madrid, because right now they're level on point, but obviously Atletico have a game in hand on Sunday against Betis. If Atletico win all their remaining games, they will win La Liga. Whereas if Barcelona won today, I mean, they would have gone over Atletico in the table
and a
few points ahead. And that, I would still stick with Atletico. There's no favourite. There can't be a favourite, like Ali explained. There can't be a favourite because all three can still win it. All three have tough games. Real Madrid will have Sevilla to play. Villarreal is their last game in the season as well, which might not be an easy place to go to. So there could be many more twists in the title race. I don't think you can pick out one of the three. I think the three are on the same level. And now let's see who could be the one with less fault than the others. And remember, Real Madrid last season, they won the last 10 games and they won La Liga. But I think there will still be more twists this season.
It's going to be brilliant, isn't it? Exactly what you want from a neutral's point of view. Thank you very much, gentlemen. More from Jules and Ali on the latest edition of Extra Time, which, as always, you can catch up over on our YouTube channel.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Meanwhile, in the Premier League today, it kicked off with Manchester City losing at home against Leeds United. Stephen Craig with us to reflect on this game. Craig, Leeds played the whole second half with only 10 men. How on earth did they win it?
Yeah, well, I mean, City did make changes, but it's still an extremely strong side. But look, there's no doubt with his team selection, he is concerned about the second leg in Dortmund. I mean, we know Dortmund haven't had the greatest of season, but they can still be a threat, particularly if you make mistakes. And so, with that in mind, he made changes. But when Cooper got sent off, and I don't know what Stevie thinks, but I thought it was a red for sure, and I think David Coop was right to tell Andre Murray to go and look at it because it was dangerous. But once they go down to 10 men, as you say, then that's it, because Leeds had been struggling anyway, you know, even with 11 men. So you thought, right, that's it. You know, City will go on, get 3 or 4, get the job done, get this Premier League title wrapped up sooner rather than later, and then move on. But because he made those changes, because, you know, Mahrez wasn't playing, Aguero wasn't there, De Bruyne, there was others, you know, Rodri wasn't in the team, there was a whole host of them, Phil Foden, who did come on, then they weren't able to get the job done. And then, you know, there was some gaps at the end, and Dallas goes through and finishes brilliantly. So, yeah, I mean, it is a concern in terms of how quickly they're going to get this Premier League title wrapped up. But it's clear that he is concerned and does not think that the Dortmund second leg is a foregone conclusion, which, of course, it is not.
City are going to win the league, Stevie. We know this, but obviously we've talked a lot about the possibility of them completing a quadruple. Are we seeing signs in a drop of quality that could affect that?
I don't think so. As Craig said, they made so many changes because of the upcoming Dortmund game. And the most important one that wasn't there was Ruben Dias. You know, we haven't seen a City side dominate completely, struggle to score and then lose a goal near the end on the counter-attack since this guy appeared. So the fact that he will now return should shore all that up. And then you'd have to think after that, the amount of chances that the City do create, then they will go on and win games. Listen, right now, regardless of the opposition, when City step on the field, I think they're favourites to win any game. And so, if you go by that, that kind of means I fancy that they could actually do this quadruple, you know.
Meanwhile, Liverpool registering their first Premier League at Anfield for a very long time, coming from behind to beat Aston Villa by 2-1. What a week for Trent Alexander-Arnold, Stevie.
Oh my goodness, I'll tell you what, I don't know about him, but I had to lie down after this game. This was torture.
Watched it in bed, what are you talking about?
To answer your question, yeah, Trent Alexander with the winner. I mean, he's basically had the greatest and worst week of his life. You know, complete and utter disaster midweek in the Champions League, and then he's the match winner today. I think we can say his form's a little bit up and down, but no, fantastic finish and shows a lot of guts. You know, he's been getting a lot of stick, not just from us, but from any other channel or pundit or analysts. Everybody's been getting on his back, and even Gareth Southgate dropping him from the England squad tells you that he's been struggling. So today was a great day for him, that's for sure. Not so great for Liverpool. Yes, they did win, but this was torture. Just, you know, a domination again, way better than the opposition, but never looked like scoring. Really didn't. Salah did his usual, scored a goal from nowhere. But Firmino and Mane, they came on, didn't look as though they were going to score. Even Jota didn't look as though he was going to score. So
goodness, get doom and gloom.
Yeah, no, but it was... I needed to lie down after it. I was absolutely shattered.
But, Craig, these were games that they weren't winning in the past. So they've got to take the 3 points here, obviously.
Yeah, and I think you saw that with Klopp's reaction when the Alexander-Arnold goal went in, because it has been desperate at times by their standards. And for long periods, they've dominated and haven't looked like scoring. And they've always looked vulnerable at the other end. We saw that with the Watkins goal when McGinn reverses it to him and he finishes well, and they're like, oh, here we go again. But, you know, Andy Robertson did brilliantly down the left, and there was Mo Salah to get a tap in, and then Alexander-Arnold with a great finish. But look, you know, it's okay playing well against Aston Villa and Arsenal, which is the games that have been in between the Real Madrid games, but they don't ask the same questions that Real Madrid have asked and are going to ask again at Anfield. So, you know, if he thinks he's had a better game, which he did, then he's going to have a rethink about his positioning and his decision-making come this Champions League game, because they're going to target him again, Alexander-Arnold, for sure. They know that back line's weak. They know the full-backs like to go forward, but they know he's been caught out, and Real Madrid will target him, but it's not going to do his confidence, Dan, any harm whatsoever, because his performances have been dissected. But listen, when people are dissecting your performances, like they have been with Alexander Arnold, it tells you just what they think of you. He's catapulted himself in the last couple of years into the standing that everybody just expects him to play 9 out of 10 every week, and it just doesn't happen.
That win for Liverpool would put them temporarily into fourth. However, Chelsea with the win against Crystal Palace put them back into a Champions League spot. Craig, this game was pretty much done in opening 10 minutes.
Yeah, look, it's difficult. I think you've got to say Chelsea were extremely professional and played well. And the interesting thing is that I'm not quite sure who he sees, or I'm not quite sure Tuchel's worked out just what that front three is going to be, and particularly that central position. We saw Havertz there today, and that effectively could be his best position because he played it quite often at Leverkusen, and he actually looked comfortable today. But let's be frank about this. Crystal Palace, apart from a 10-minute period after half-time when he brought on McCarthy and Sloop, and Benteke scored that great header, were absolutely abysmal. I mean, how can you be at home at Selhurst Park and sit off and allow Chelsea to play that ball around as if it was a training game? So, from Chelsea's perspective, thankfully from their perspective, it was a walk in the park. Nothing to worry about in terms of the game coming up against Porto, because they had never got a finger laid on them. Great 3 points. Mount was fantastic again. All these things are positive off the back of the West Brom debacle. But Crystal Palace, geez, oh geez. I mean, how bad were they?
We saw Christian Pulisic getting a couple of goals as well. Kai Havertz, arguably his best performance in a Chelsea shirt as well, Stevie.
Yeah, I mean, I quite liked the way they were set up. You know, Havertz to me is a guy who knits things together. And when you've got two guys on the outside, one being Mount on one side and Pulisic on the other, who actually want to get in and run in behind and get in the box and get on the end of things, I thought it worked great. Now, yes, Crystal Palace were pretty horrible. But you know what? You can only play what's put in front of you. And they completely dissected them. The only criticism you would have is that they didn't score more. I mean, even Pulisic had another chance that he probably could have scored. So that would have been a great hat-trick for him to come back. But Havertz and Pulisic were... they could only be as good as the opposition let them. And the opposition let them. So they turned up and they produced.
I'm with Stevie here. I think it looks a good combination, a good threesome. And I think, you know, barring a disaster, they're going to be going into the semi-finals, I believe it is, if they beat Porto. Yeah. They were at the quarter-final stage. I'm getting mixed up. So barring a disaster, and listen, it's not impossible for Porto. If West Brom can go to Stamford Bridge and beat Chelsea like they did, then Porto can. So you're not looking too far ahead. But if they do get to the semi-finals, and there is some big games coming up for the Champions League spot in the Premier League, and there's no, with Liverpool's win, there's no doubt that's happening. I don't think Timo Werner gets in the team. I mean, as Stevie said, I'd much rather have a fit Christian Pulisic and I'm clearly on form and, you know, fantastic season again, Mason Mount behind Havertz. Because Havertz is a clever player. We've just not quite seen it every week. But he's played wide, he's played central, deeper. He's played, you know, where Christian Pulisic and Mount has played, and it's not quite worked for him so far. And so maybe that's good food for thought for Thomas Tuchel, and not so much for Timo Werner, who I think if it was a really big game for Chelsea tomorrow, might find himself stuck on the bench. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about his form. But Pulisic looks sharp. We know about Mount, and as Stevie said, Havertz, albeit against Palace, looked a lot more comfortable in that position than he has done in the others that he's played for Chelsea this season.
Great stuff as always, guys. Thank you very much. Just a reminder, you can check out more of our video content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go there and subscribe.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, in Germany, a tough week for Bayern Munich continue. They currently manage a 1-1 draw against Union Berlin. Their lead cut to 5 points at the top of the table as well. Come in Jana Arga-Fjortov. Yeah, and this team was pretty much unrecognisable. This starting 11, so many changes, of course, with one eye on that clash against PSG midweek. Overall, does this result matter?
Well, could they? We'll see. Leipzig, great answer, winning a great game a lot of goals at Bremen. But I think that the decisive game for them was to beat Leipzig away. If not, they would probably have had a stronger team today. They played 1-1 against Union Berlin. The first game couldn't do it today either. But I think there are eyes on the prize now, and the main prize, that is the Champions League trophy and PSG next week.
So many changes I mentioned, Jan. Most of them tactical. Some of them, of course, forced. How are they looking going into that game with regards to fit bodies?
Well, Süle is 100% out, Gnabry out, Lewandowski out, and Goretzka is still a hope. There's still a hope that they can get him going, which is very important for them, because that Kimmich-Goretzka kind of middle balance everything in a team, it's very important for them. So I think that this was a matter of just coming through this game. I still think that Hansi Flick expected him to win the game, but it just shows you that you need your best players. A Müller assist again today. Musiala, great goal, great balance, but Ingvarsson equalizing for Union Berlin. I don't think that Bayern had that on their bill. I think they thought they would have that 7-point lead at the top and look comfortable.
And Hansi Flick, just a ray of sunshine after the game, yeah.
Oh yeah, this is it's getting a bit embarrassing, really. But you know, nobody will speak about the elephant in the room, because it's all about now to find an end game. Mm. This is a blame game for Salihamidzic, who is supported by Uli Hoeneß. Imagine that. He's not involved as much as before. Yeah, right. Like a Don Corleone is always involved. And then you have Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who supports Hansi Flick. But the thing is that Hansi Flick will end up being the German national coach. Mm. So who will then say, when that will be go into public, who to blame? Because he has to break his contract. Salihamidzic needs to find a new coach. And they all know that Hansi Flick has been a perfect Bayern coach. So it's going to be interesting to follow FC Hollywood in the next coming weeks.
Jan, psychologically, are they going to be okay? Say they get knocked out by PSG. This title, as we mentioned, you're not home and hosed. It's still 5 points. Leipzig are definitely putting up a fight. Can they get their grip back on this title with regards to focus, with all the mess that's going on around them?
Yeah, it's a good point, Dan, because Bayern normally are very used to this, because FC Hollywood, that is a part of Bayern, and they just end up getting the results. And if I'm not 100% wrong, and I'm wrong then and again, but next round is away at Wolfsburg. So what can happen there? Glasner has had a fantastic season with his team, and they can lose there. And if Leipzig then do their job, it's going to be down to 2 points. But after all these years with Bayern Munich winning the titles, we don't dare to dream of an intense end of the season. But we still have a hope, at least, that Bayern, and I've always said that, the only team that can beat Bayern Munich is Bayern Munich. And they do their best now.
Yep, Leipzig, as we mentioned, just continuing to put the pressure on, a 4-1 victory away against Werder Bremen. Jan, we've been so critical of Leipzig and them not being able to convert opportunities, and this is why they're not maybe closer to Bayern. They did today, though.
They did today, and they played against Werder Bremen. As they had a defense, I've never seen something like it. I share the studio here in Norway with Rune Bratseth, who used to be the giant back for Werder Bremen when they were winning titles, and today they gave goals away. But having said that, a good day for one Norwegian striker at the moment. Alexander Sørloth getting two goals. He is slowly getting into it now. Olmo as well, a great goal. And then we expect Sabitzer to always come and do his stuff. But it was a great win for them. But in the Bundesliga, there is no easy games. You can just not turn up and take your 3 points. But this was a convincing win of them. And it was a signal sending to Bayern, okay, you concentrate on Champions League, PSG and everything. But listen, you have to wait to get the Schale, like they call the title trophy here in Germany. You have to fight for it.
As I mentioned then, Leipzig with that 4-1 victory away against Werder Bremen. 5 points that separate them and Bayern Munich at the top of the table. Meanwhile, a huge victory for Eintracht Frankfurt, beating Wolfsburg by 4-3, meaning they close the gap on third to just 1 point. And it leaves all that pressure still on Borussia Dortmund, who came from behind to beat Stuttgart 3-2 today, but they still remain 7 points off a Champions League place. Let's start off with Bellingham, obviously robbed of that goal midweek. Nice that he got that goal today, Jan.
He was very good in the Champions League. At the beginning of the game, he didn't play that well. But then he slowly get into the game. He's a good lad. He's a very good player. And what I noticed when he scored that goal, it was not like a celebration or something. Get me the ball. We need another goal. A point is not enough. Just shows the attitude of this boy. This will be one of the best player around in his position. Just wait for it.
Good character shown in this one, considering they were down, having known the Eintracht Frankfurt school.
Yeah, Borussia Dortmund today, as again, you never know which team will come out. And in the beginning, there was this slow, too many touches kind of team. But you have to give them a bit credit. They were a big underdog against Manchester City, managed to play a quite good game against them and give them some hope for the home game. And tonight as well, or today, they were down, coming back, didn't play well, but still, at the end of the day, Ansgar Knauf, a 19-year-old that they scored his first Bundesliga goal for them, and 3-2, and that was 3 points very much needed in their fight for the fourth Champions League place.
They're not going to make it though, are they, Jan?
Well, they could. Next game, like I said, Eintracht Frankfurt playing Gladbach away. They could lose that game. Dortmund playing Bremen at home. Bremen will give goals away for fun. Then they could be down to four, but I'm a former Eintracht player, so I will say they will never make it.
Looking at my notes, Jan, 6 games, no goals, Mr. Haaland, he's done.
Yeah, he has peaked, hasn't he, as an age of 20. And yeah, involved as well in the Norwegian national team, didn't score there either. You know, a goal-getter, he will always tell you, now, I don't think of that. It's all about winning. It's all about coming into the right position. And you just see the nose of Pinocchio just growing. I'm sure that Erling Haaland, as every other goal scorer, he think of this 24-7. He wants to come back there. And somehow then you kind of get, you don't feel that the runs, that the teammates don't find you. You think you will never ever score again. But I can tell you one thing, Dan. This is breaking news for you.
Okay.
Erling Braut Haaland will score a goal soon.
Oh, really sticking your neck out there, Jan. Thank you as always, Jan Hogg, for yourself. Great to have you with us. Just a reminder, the Bundesliga, of course, continues tomorrow. Schalke taking on Augsburg, followed by Köln against Mainz. And on Monday, it's Hoffenheim against Bayer Leverkusen.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
PSG in action today away against Strasbourg. They'd record a 4-1 victory away from home. Kylian Mbappe on the score sheet, meaning they are 3 points still adrift of Lille at the top of the table. Slight concern, Keylor Navas coming up during that win. However, Pochettino said that it was just precautionary. Let's welcome in Julien Laurent. Jules, do you know what? I was watching this game, and I was thinking, how many strips do PSG have? I swear it's a different one every weekend.
Yeah, they are four this season. They've got the one that you saw today, which is technically the third kit with the colours of Qatar. And then you've got the blue and the white ones, home and away, which are the normal ones. And then you've got, obviously, the pink,
yeah,
flashy one, pink and black ones. That is the fourth kit. Yeah, yeah. Big clubs. That's what big clubs do.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Trying to get as much money out of the fans as possible. Right. Should we talk about the game, Jules? I don't feel we need to because obviously PSG getting the win. It's all about the prep, isn't it, for the game against Bayern Munich? And this was kind of that perfect build-up. No problems, no fuss. Get it done, and now focus on the Champions League.
That's right, although we saw Keylor Navas being subbed off with what Pochettino described as just by precaution, and we don't know exactly what was wrong or why he felt like he had to come off and felt a bit uncomfortable, but they're really hoping at the club certainly tonight that he will be okay for Tuesday. But everybody is obviously very anxious about everyone, and before the game today was like, okay, no one gets injured, no one gets hurt. We can't lose any more players already before that huge game on Tuesday against Bayern Munich. So we saw in the Bayern game against Union Berlin, some of their players also had a few niggles.
Yep.
In Paris, it was only Navas. But let's hope for them that it'll be okay.
Jules, looking ahead to the game against Bayern, expectations inevitably high around PSG. And let's face it, you're never going to meet Bayern at a better time, which inevitably is going to then put pressure on PSG even more, isn't it?
You're right, yeah, putting more pressure because this is the right time to knock them out and to qualify for the semi-final the second year in a row, which would be a great achievement for this team and for Mauricio Pochettino, who only arrived in January. So you're right, more pressure. But I think how big it was psychologically to win that away leg in Munich, despite the fact that Munich were really good and maybe the best team and dominant, I think psychologically that was a huge boost for PSG and for the Parisians. And they will go into this game with the pressure, but also feeling that they're quite close of doing it and making this and beating the world champions and European champions, which would be, again, an incredible achievement, just that in itself. And I think there'd be more of that possibility and the hopes of doing that more than sort of like collapsing under the pressure.
Julien Laurent, as always, thank you very much. More to come, of course, as we'll be looking ahead to those big Champions League ties. And just a reminder, you can download our daily podcast, which is available over on the website.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it then. What a day right across the board. Thank you very much for watching. We'll, of course, be back tomorrow, but be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Jules and Ali back to answer your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Ali and Jules with me. So many questions about El Clasico, boys. One thing we didn't bring up on the show, actually. I didn't ask you, which I maybe should have done. Should it have been a penalty on Braithwaite, Ali?
I don't think so.
He went down easy, didn't he?
Well, I guess you can make the argument that because of the momentum that he's carrying with full speed trying to get to the ball ahead of Ferland Mendy, Mendy does make a slightest contact with Braithwaite's arm. Maybe that unbalances him in a way that he just kind of goes down in the manner in which he did. I don't think it was a penalty, and certainly I didn't think it was enough to overturn the call by Gil Manzano, the referee.
Jules?
I didn't think it was, but then I saw Mendy's reaction, and he turns around and looks at the ref, and you see how frightened he is on his face, because he knows, he goes, no, not now. And then I think he's very relieved when the ref doesn't give in, doesn't even go and check on VAR. So I think you could have easily seen it given, and it's not a scandal that he hasn't been given.
Should Messi still leave Barcelona at the end of the season, Ali?
No, I don't think so. I think this team and the manager in place, Ronald Koeman, have shown that they're taking steps forward. Had it continued to go in the direction that it was going early on in the season, where this team didn't seem to be going anywhere in a manner that seemed to be organized or with a plan in place, then of course I think Lionel Messi would have said, see you guys later. Right now, I think there are enough signs for Lionel Messi and Barcelona to be optimistic for the future, and certainly the young talent in this team would be a reason to stay.
Where would he go, Jules? We have Pep Guardiola coming out and saying last week that they haven't got enough money for a striker, so surely they haven't got enough money for Lionel Messi. Like, where are his options?
So Guardiola said they don't have the money for a 150 million player. Leo Messi, in terms of transfer fee, won't cost you anything. You will pay agent commission and to his dad and signing on fee maybe, plus enormous wages. But in terms of transfer fees, there's nothing to be paid. So I would think that Manchester City could afford him if they wanted to, really. PSG said they can, and they're working out the numbers to see if they can, if he decides to leave Barcelona. I still think, like Ali, that he will stay. I think he will stay, especially if he's being told that these squads will see some reinforcement, because you need to rebuild this squad. There's a lot of positions that need players, full stop, not let alone strengthening those positions. So I think if you sit him down and say, listen, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to work on this squad for next season and for the future, I think they will easily convince him to stay.
10 outfield players are now injured at Bayern. Jules, did your wish come true?
Listen, it wasn't my wish. Lewandowski was already injured. However, and again, I think this is not just Bayern and PSG. This is, I think, for the whole season, you see how crazy this season has been. And now more and more, we see all those injuries. We saw it in the Clásico with Lucas Vázquez having to be subbed off because of an injury. We saw Valverde limping off at the end of the game as well. And we saw Coman today, we saw Navas in the PSG game coming off injured too. We've seen, obviously, in the first leg between the two, so many players coming off before half-time, early in the second half. This is crazy. So Bayern have some worries. I don't know how many players will be back on Tuesday night. The turnaround is so short as well between first leg and second leg for those quarterfinals that it's pretty worrying if you're Hansi Flick and if you're the club.
With the NFL draft coming up soon, who are the Cowboys going to get, Ali? Anyone exciting?
Who are the Cowboys going to get? Well,
That wasn't somebody asking. I was just leading off on a tangent with your Cowboys ways.
Is this not a question then?
No, this is me just making a polite aside, but I don't really care, so we'll carry on. With the NFL draft coming up soon, if football had a similar type of draft system and you're the GM, which player under 25 are you picking first overall? That's a very new twist on Haaland or Mbappe question.
Okay. So, are you now asking me the question?
Yes, that's the question now. I'm sorry for going off of the question initially.
All right, so it's not Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. We don't want that.
No, not Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, whatever. All right. He's got beautiful hair, by the way.
He has
got wonderful flowing hair. Very wonderful flowing hair. I don't know what that feels like.
Stuart Robson used to have hair like that.
Well, that came crashing down quickly. Woo! Oh, man, life hits you fast.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Erling Haaland with my first pick. Goals, baby. I need goals. My team needs goals.
Jules, who's your first pick?
Are you really asking me this question? There's only one. Kylian!
Oh,
every day.
Dear me. Okay. Will Real Madrid win the double? Veterans along with good form seems like a good combination to win both La Liga and the Champions League. We kind of talked about this on the show, didn't we? So let me put my own little twist on this now. What are they more likely to win? La Liga or the Champions League, Jules?
I think they will win the Champions League. Between the two, I'm not sure they've got the squad, especially with all the injuries now we see, and we've talked about this congested season before. I'm not sure they can win both. And it would be a very tense end of the season anyway on every level if they have to play all those games, 3 days, 3 days, 3 days. So I would go for the Champions League because, as we've said on the show, this is very much a cup team. In many respects, this is a cup team, a team that reacts when they've got their back to the wall, when they're under pressure, when it's a game they have to win. Maybe more than being able, for example, to win the remaining eight in La Liga. I don't know. So they can easily win both, of course. They can win none as well. But I think if I had to pick one, I would pick the Champions League. They will knock out Liverpool, then likely to play Chelsea in the semi-final. This is a tie again that they can win. And then it's a final. And if there's one team that knows how to win Champions League finals, it's this one. So I'll go Champions League.
Ali?
I agree. I think this is about the ability of this group of players to be able to focus on a singular task and on games that truly matter. And I think you can do that far easier in Champions League with it's a less amount of games. And the path forward for Real Madrid, the potential matchup against Chelsea is one that you have to think that Real Madrid has a real opportunity to go into the final. And once in a final, if you bet against Real Madrid, you just don't know what you're doing.
Here we go then, boys. We're going to the Literacy Corner. Since Don doesn't read, can George and Ali tell each what their favourite book is? Obviously, everybody's favourite book is Five League Titles and a Packet of Crisps by Steve Nichol. But second favourite?
Of course.
Ali, where we going?
I'm going to go with The Iliad and the Odyssey by Homer.
Ooh, talk about highbrow, Ali.
Well, I'm saying Greek mythology, baby.
Wow.
I like it.
You
know the real reason is because my dad's name is Homero, which in Spanish is Homer, and I was always sort of attracted to that. And then my nickname growing up when I was a player was Homerito, Little Homer. So of course I was very much attracted to the storyline and to the stories itself simply because of the author.
And now your hairline is more towards Homer Simpson. Oh, just not necessary.
You know,
it's just me. It's just not necessary.
Really?
Nice. It's just
but not my waistline.
No, Ali, exactly, very spelt. Jules?
Well, first of all, we need to tell people that after we had that debate, what was it, Monday night maybe on Extra Time with the books and Don and everything?
Yes.
Don texted our WhatsApp group saying that Uncle Buck was certainly not better as a book than as a movie. Which is like, really? Now we're down to Uncle Buck? I mean, it's something else. I would go for Paulo Coelho and The Alchemist, which I would really advise everyone to read.
Wow, there you go. Goodness me.
Oh, I also like The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. I like that one too.
Wow. I'm going to throw in some dark. We need to talk about Kevin. Very, very good as well. The Curious Incident of the Dog at Night. If you haven't read that, read that.
Yeah.
Goodness me, we've never had this sort of highbrow discussion ever in our life.
100 Years of Solitude. One of my favorites, 100 Years of Solitude.
Yeah, of course.
You know how I am with people.
Yeah,
man.
You like that, Ali. Wow, there we go. That's it. ESPN FC has gone posh. We'll be back tomorrow, though, dragging it back down through the banter. Be sure to join us then. What's happening tomorrow? United are playing Spurs. Oh, that'd be exciting. 0-0.
How? Oh.